Welcome to Book Waves. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Steve Toltz, whose latest novel is Quicksand. Earlier novel, A Fraction of the Whole, was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Born in Sydney, Australia, and now lives currently in New York. This novel is, I guess you'd call it a character study of two people, one in particular, a guy named Aldo Benjamin. And I understand that Aldo began as a character in Fraction of the Whole, but got cut. Is that right?
Basically, what happened was when I finished A Fraction of the Whole, it ran to about 1,070 pages, and I sent it out and got a whole heap of rejections, the so-called encouraging rejections, where I got a nice letter along with the rejection. One of them finally convinced me that I should try and cut it down, and when I went back to it, after having maybe 6 months of sending it out, I was able to see really clearly that there was a character that seemed to belong in a different novel altogether. It's strange that I didn't see it before, but I always kind of think that a writer needs time like a painter uses light. If you could sort of sit down and write a whole thing and you actually can't even see it without some time to sort of shed some light on it. So after having a 6 month break, I was able to literally, like, in probably 3 hours, removed about 320 pages from that manuscript, cutting this character out. He had a lot of bad luck, and I think that was what's different between this character and the characters in my first book, whereas everything that happened to them was because of their fear of death and their anxiety. Things that happened to this guy seemed to just come externally. It seemed to be just like a lot of bad luck. When I started writing a new book, I realized that I would be using him.
He also contributes to his own bad luck. The bad luck happens, but it's sort of, he puts himself in a position for them to happen.
That's one of the central questions of the novel is bad luck self-harm by another name? Are we contributing to our bad luck by putting ourselves out there, or certainly by fearing the worst? And the book is definitely about fear, and Aldo has sort of abnormal number of fears, some of them rational, some of them irrational.
Both he and the other main character, Liam, who is, quote, writing the book, both fail a lot in whatever they do. And you kind of do look at it and go, well, maybe they're bringing about their own failures.
Yeah, look, I think so. Because I also think perhaps we're not always suited to the things that we try to do in life. You have to fail a lot before you succeed. I think I was kind of marked by my decade of trying to write, and I was also trying to make movies, and having these things not turn out the way I wanted was certainly something that made me just see life through that perspective.
Translating your own life elements into a novel, even if it's just the thematic elements, means putting your own consciousness on a back burner and just letting whatever happen happen. How hard or easy was that for you for these two books?
There isn't a lot that is strictly autobiographical in my novel, certainly not factually. In this novel, there is something that's autobiographical, which is the main character was a paraplegic, and I had spent some time in hospital myself in a wheelchair. And so that was a difficult thing for me to actually write, because I'm not a memoirist, or I don't really write nonfiction essays. Because for me, writing is the process of discovery and the process of invention. And if I have told a story, even a personal anecdote, if I've told it to friends, that story is dead to me on the page because it's already told. For me, it has to come out of the actual writing. So when I was wanting to depict Aldo in hospital, so what happened to me was I was just walking down the street one day in Paris where I was living, and I had a sort of spontaneous spinal hemorrhage and wound up in a wheelchair, and I was told I wouldn't walk again, and then I was kind of medevaced back to Australia where I spent a few months in the spinal ward there, and there were certainly a lot of experiences that I wanted to communicate into this book, but also a lot of the interesting things about the hospital and about suffering, the absurdity of endurance, and gosh, I don't know what else. There's a lot in there, and in this book, in order for me to kind of keep that process of discovery and invention, I've written that section as a long poem.
In Quicksand, Aldo at one point is sitting on a rock trying to surf without use of his legs, and that comes from the earlier book. It's not something you tried, is it?
No, look, it's not something I tried. One of the other themes of the book is this, the idea of the stubbornness of personality, that whoever we are before our so-called life-changing experiences, we are mostly afterwards. And so one thing I discovered about myself and about other people around me was that the people who were in hospitals in wheelchairs, they were still generally the same type of person, either optimistic or not. And you know, I'm kind of a cautious person, and it was the day that the person from the hospital was trying to teach me wheelchair skills, and, you know, I learned a little bit and how to kind of transfer in and out and all that kind of thing. I remember there was a day that he wanted me to, like, go down a set of stairs in the wheelchair, and I was kind of terrified because I could just see how this could go terribly, terribly wrong. Meanwhile, there was a guy who I was in hospital with who had been base jumping. He was an adventurer. I mean, he just flew down those stairs without worry. And sort of, I don't know, about a year later, I Googled him to see what he would have been up to. And I saw him surfing on a surfing competition. He was still paralyzed. I was very interested in exploring that kind of gung-ho, interesting nature.
Did you make it down those stairs?
You know what? Nope, I never did. I chickened out, and I was like, I'll do that one day. And then luckily, I kind of wiggled a toe, and then I was able to get up on the bars and learn to walk again. So I never really had to confront it.
In what we've discussed, Steve Toltz, you talk a lot about these themes. Were those themes going on in your head when you were doing the writing, or do they only kind of happen when you're doing the rewriting and look at what you've written?
There's a few things. The first theme about fear, I knew that that was one that I wanted to do because A Fraction of the Whole is very much about the fear of death, and I always knew that that's what it was while I was writing it. And I intended this book to be kind of like a companion novel, to be about the fear of life, which in the Buddhist sense of life being life is suffering. So that I knew what I wanted to do straight up. There are other things that just came out. Like, there's a lot about art in the book. That has just happened because I realized that I was spending so much time with artists, and I was in a relationship with a person who was an artist, and I did a couple of, like, artist residencies, or saw inside artist residencies, and they're such peculiar places that the kind of themes of art just started to poke their way through into the novel. Yeah, I was interested not in art in a lofty sense. I'm interested in artists as personality types.
The character, Morel, the professor, the teacher, he's not a professor, he's a high school teacher.
He's a high school teacher.
He's got his own theories of art, which I guess once you got into that, you began playing with it.
There are a lot of, like, aphoristic kind of theories, things that kind of be said in one sentence or two. And that for me was interesting, and this is the kind of thing which makes writing fun for me, is I had a character that I knew was this art teacher, and he'd written this manifesto on art, and he had all these ideas and all these philosophies on art, but I personally didn't have any. So when I look at theory and I look at philosophy and I look at things like metaphysics, for me, they're just kind of discrete short stories, even as ideas. And so it's just another form of fiction for me. So what I would do is just sort of set myself the task. My character has written a book about art. I don't know anything about art. I don't really want to research it because I want his theories to be original. So I just have to come up with them. It's kind of an old-fashioned thing, but I would, like, set myself a task and then sort of contemplation, or just think about it. Or alternatively, I would read something so irrelevant like a plumbing manual, and just a phrase or a word triggers, you know, an idea about what you're thinking of.
The good thing, of course, is that any given theory that Morel says could be refuted and it wouldn't matter because it's his theory and he's written this crazy book.
Exactly. Well, the guy, I actually feel that way about most theories. Even when something sounds incredibly true, that the exact opposite is also incredibly true.
The character of Aldo, who is central to the book, becomes a paraplegic partway through the book, spends a great deal of time asking completely outrageous and bizarre questions. Do you drive your wife nuts with those, or is that just something that came up in the writing of the book?
Sometimes they come to me and I, you know, I blurt them out. But there are certainly things that just come out in the writing. You know, and the fact that I write humorously as well, that they're kind of humorously phrased, that is sort of something that came at the same time, I think, as my connection to the written word. So it's just something that happened in childhood, that whenever I pick up a pen, it comes out in that way. It's not actually a choice.
Is that the same thing with Aldo's utterly terrible ideas of entrepreneurship?
That, again, I kind of set myself the task of coming up with these. These are not ones that maybe one or two I had myself. He has ideas like a BB&B, a brothel bed and breakfast, or I don't know, there's sort of a ton of them. And again, that was just something that was really fun to come up with. They're almost discrete short stories of their own.
The theory, of course, about how a book develops and how characters develop often contains the phrase, and I've talked to many writers about this, the characters took over. And we know, of course, characters don't take over. You're writing the book. Keeping in mind that that's just a metaphor for something, how does that process work for you?
For me, it is a real process of evolution. I'm sort of growing him in a petri dish, if you like. Aldo, for instance, began very organically, not just the thing that I told you before about having a similar character cut out of a novel, but I just wanted, for instance, for it to be the opposite of what I had done before. I remember finishing A Fraction of the Whole and thought, well, I had this character who was a real hermit. I'm going to give this guy lots of friends. In fact, so many friends that he's kind of constantly making friends. And then why is he making friends? And I kind of had a psychological reason for it. The last relationship in the book was a father and a son. This time I wanted to do friendship. So that was, they're just kind of basic oppositional kind of reasons. And every decision you make, you know, ends up, you need a why for it. And then it sort of grows. And I wanted him to be obsessed with these fears and his idea that having a lot of money is the one thing in our life that can at least combat if you find yourself in hospital, if you find yourself in medical problems, or if you find yourself in legal problems. So that's how he became this kind of pathological entrepreneur, because it's really a way with dealing with his fears of the unknown happening to him or to his loved ones. And so it just keeps growing and growing like that. And certainly when I'm writing actual scenes, that is when my characters do things I have no idea. Like the dialogue that comes out, it comes out at the same time. I'm surprised by the sentences that they utter. It's happening, I guess, at a level that is like some kind of split second before my conscious mind registers it, even though it's me. So on that level, whenever something's happening in a particular scene that I'm writing, in the act of like composition, they're always like just one step ahead of me. And that's what makes it fun for me.
There is a third character, Stella, who is a major character in the book, Aldo's off again, on again wife.
Yeah.
How did she develop?
She's definitely an amalgam of people that I know. You know, I put a little bit of myself into it. The great thing is that nobody ever recognizes themselves in books. Just change the eye color and that person has no idea, especially when you're writing vaguely unflattering portraits of characters. People don't recognize their faults. You know, Aldo is also a muse in this book. That's his, and when we think of the muses, we often think of the muses as women. So I liked the idea of Aldo being the muse for his wife, who is the real artist, and then his girlfriend, who also becomes one.
And then there's the character of his mother. Is this another case of people don't recognize themselves?
Yeah, look, I definitely, you know, threaded slight bits from reality, but also there's a lot of unreality in it, and is a way of dealing with Aldo, as I said, is this very fearful person, and his mother is also a fearful person, and you know, it's sort of trying to trace back where these fears come from.
You're listening to an interview with Steve Taltz, whose latest novel is Quicksand. I'm Richard Walensky on Bookwaves. Steve Taltz, let's go back and talk a little bit about how you became a writer. You grew up in Sydney. Peter Carey, Richard Flanagan, and certainly from Hollywood, there's a whole slew of Australian actors. As you were growing up, none of these people had become successful at all, which means,
only,
I guess,
only Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson was. That was it, yeah. Basically, Sydney was kind of considered a cultural backwater, at least in the rest of the world.
There was a period where a lot of our kind of intellectuals moved out of Australia, but they usually moved to, I guess, to London and to New York. Germaine Greer and Robert Hughes and Clive James were all of a generation that felt that they had to get out of Australia, definitely, to make it. In terms of sort of fiction writers, I've never felt that geography is an interesting way for me to classify writers, just for me personally. So, you know, I feel like my nation is the English language, and what has appealed to me about writers is usually the kind of distinct idiosyncratic consciousness of a particular writer or not, whether he's Russian or German or Austrian or Australian. So I never felt any fidelity to reading Australian literature or writing, and I didn't know any writers, and I never met a writer until I had been published. We don't really have MFAs, so here you have things like where you go into a writing program and your teacher might be some amazing writer, contemporary writer, and I didn't have that experience. So I was just basically reading, first of all, the books that my parents had on the shelves, and then the books that I kind of fell in love with, and they were generally by people who had died.
Did you read science fiction in those days?
My dad had a collection of those kind of sci-fi magazines from the 50s, so I used to read a lot of the short stories. I enjoyed thrillers a little bit more, you know, like Ira Levin type of books, and then really Catch-22, Catch in the Rye, all those kind of things. My parents sort of had a good idea of what was important. And Roald Dahl being a big writer for me, because I read his kids' books, I remember my parents had all these works, and so I remember picking, you know, being very young, but reading, going from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to sort of Switch Bitch and those kind of adult stories.
Did you think about being a writer in those days at all?
I never seriously considered it, although writing was more my default hobby. So whenever I wanted to do something for fun, you know, I couldn't draw, so I would write stories. And when I finished university, I kind of wanted to make films. Although as my 20s went on and I was going from minimum wage job to minimum wage job, from the kind of, you know, I always thought of it as sort of starting at the bottom and working my way sideways, as I give to the character Liam in the book, in order to supplement my income, I would see that there was like a short story competition or a radio play competition, and writing being my default hobby, that's what I felt like I could do to earn a little bit of extra cash. Although I never won a single thing, at some point I was kind of developing this kind of narrative skill.
Did you ever think about being a cop? Luckily, Liam.
No, it was has never crossed my mind in a split second.
Steve Toltz, among the jobs you have here that are listed, cameraman?
Because I was really enjoying making short films, when I had finished uni, they came out with the very first digital camera, and I got a bank loan, and I bought it. And because I had this kind of new highfalutin, newfangled thing, I knew someone who worked at a cable place, and they assumed that I must know how to work it. So I bought it in order to make short films, but ended up shooting comedians around Sydney until I dropped the camera in a lake. That was the effective end of my career. It lasted a year.
Telemarketer.
That's the fallback. That's what I did whenever I lived in Vancouver for a while. Kind of when you're traveling around, when you have no skills whatsoever and are too clumsy to be a waiter, telemarketing is something that you can always do. And I was an extremely depressing job, and when I was in Vancouver, I ended up working for a company that was raising money for charities that didn't exist, I realized at some point.
Security guard and private investigator.
Well, the security was when I was in Toronto. It was for a film company, so I had to guard trucks. That was my job. Even when I was on it, like, someone was like, hey, do you want to work on David Cronenberg's film Crash? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then I get there, and they're like, hey, your job is to get to the street at 5 in the morning. The trucks are going to come in at 6 at night. Put out some orange cones and stand there all day and make sure that nobody parks there. That was one part of the job. And the other part was, okay, they've been shooting all day. It's like 6 o'clock. Everyone's going home. Just watch the trucks tonight.
And private investigator, which you hated, apparently.
Actually, answered an ad in the paper. It was one of those ones. I was going through one of those years of just keep looking for work, because I was a TV extra for a long time, TV and film extra. There was a period when the Australian dollar was very low, and a lot of the American mega productions would come to Australia. So we had Star Wars. I was in that. Oh, you know, I was just a generic pilot walking in a crowd scene. We had Mission Impossible filming in Australia and Matrix, Superman, and a whole bunch. So I did all that. And in fact, what was interesting was that after I got out of hospital, it was only halfway through writing Infection of the Whole, so I hadn't sold it and I needed to go back to work. The very, very first thing I did was I thought, okay, well, I can go back to being an extra. And I called up the agency and they said, okay, I've got a TV show that you can go on. It was a show called All Saints, which is an Australian hospital drama. So I got out of hospital after being 4 months in hospital. First thing I do, first job, is go to wardrobe, put on a hospital gown, and then go and lie in bed and pretend to be a patient. But at some point, I was answering an ad and saw it literally said in the paper, private investigator, no experience necessary. I was like, this can't be true. It was a guy who was a lawyer working for an insurance company, and he just needed someone to do it, so I did it for a little while.
Or also said English teacher.
That was in Barcelona without any qualifications whatsoever. I just put ads up around the city and got a whole bunch of students.
So you mentioned a moment ago, because now we're coming up to your decision to become a writer. How did you get started on that first novel, Fraction of the Whole?
Well, as I mentioned, I had been writing in order to try and make $100 to enter these short story competitions. And at some point, I realized I had two stories that seemed like the beginning and the end of a novel. There were sort of two kind of similar characters in the two stories. And I thought, well, this could be a novel and maybe I'll just join them together, fill in the middle. And the middle ended up taking me 5 years to write, and it became a fraction of the whole.
What's the story behind naming the novel Quicksand?
It was one of those last-minute titles. I remember I was about to send the manuscript out, and then it just sort of came to me. There's two, I guess, reasons. The book is about fears, as I said, and having a lot of both rational and irrational fears. This has been pointed out. I heard somebody talking about this kind of not that long ago, but it's been pointed out. But when you're a child, I was a child of the 70s, and I watched a lot of TV growing up. And in the kind of late 70s and early 80s, quicksand was just on almost every TV program at some point. There was a character sinking in quicksand. For my, like, impressionable 8-year-old, I remember being afraid of quicksand. It was a fear that it was just one of the things, like, that we had in our minds. And, of course, it has proven not to be a big deal in modern society. As Aldo is this character, he fears not only just like hospitals and prisons, but he fears accidentally being shot in the face by a hunter or sneezing, causing an avalanche. It just seemed like one of the fears that could possess Aldo. And then at the same time, it seemed also that Aldo is struggling, and the whole thing about quicksand is the more you struggle, the deeper you sink. And that's kind of the experience I had writing the book. So far, these two titles, A Fraction of the Whole and Quicksand, both describe the characters' predicaments and my predicament as a writer writing these books.
Fraction of the Whole, in that you had the beginning and end and needed to fill in the middle?
No, it was kind of like a note to self that I had written this 1,000-page book and that I felt like I was putting everything in there. And it was sort of also an announcement to myself that, like, no, this is only, you know, a little bit of what you're going to write. It's only a fraction. And so it doesn't incorporate everything. When you finish a book, even as the ink is still drying, people are always very excited to tell you that your next book's going to be really hard. It's like, oh, the second novel is the hard one. So A Fraction of the Whole kind of summed that up for me. And Quicksand was a difficult book to write as well. The main difficult thing about writing a second novel, actually, is that horrifying realization that writing A Fraction of the Whole only taught me how to write A Fraction of the Whole, and I had to learn how to write this book from scratch. And it's stylistically a different book. It's sort of denser, and the sentences are longer, and so the scenes themselves are longer, and the conversations are longer. So it is doing something different. I had been driving myself crazy in the process of structuring it, and because what happens is I come up with all these kind of story strands, and it's like I have to wait for the nerve endings of one to connect with the nerve endings of another, and I probably spent the first 3 years on the first page.
But also the other problem, I would think, is that Fraction of the Whole comes out and gets shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, which was wonderful for you, of course, because it meant Quicksand would always sell no matter what you turned in, but also scary because there are so many cases where there's a great first novel and then zip.
The crazy truth of writing books, I think, is that the book that you would write for one reader is the same you would write for 1,000 readers. It's just the same book. And in fact, it's the same book as it is if it was for no readers. The reader is both necessary and irrelevant. I don't think of the reader in the same way as, like, when I'm writing, in the same way as that when I eat sugar, I don't think of the dentist. It's just something I put out of my mind. I know it's going to be there eventually. But I'm just trying to create the platonic ideal of the book that I want to write. And so all of that kind of pressure, which people assume is upon you, actually isn't. It's irrelevant to the process. The only pressure that's ever there is the same pressure that's always there, which is like, how can I feed my family and still do this? Although it's also interesting because there are elements where if you are writing something disturbing or something that might be taboo, whether it's a single line or a whole concept, that is the point you really have to put the audience out of your mind, because if being an artist means anything to me, it only means one thing, which is that you don't self-censor for commercial reasons and also for reasons of offending somebody's sensibilities. So putting the reader out of your mind is a absolutely necessary part of being able to feel free to write whatever it is you feel you want or have to write.
Since a lot of both books on many levels come out of the unconscious, when you go back to them and you're reading them for editing, cleaning up purposes, was there anything in Quicksand that suddenly surprised you and you went, holy cow, I can't believe I just put that in the book?
Whenever I do read back, I am surprised by a lot of things because I still write by hand. I write in these notebooks. Once I've written about 10 or 20 pages, then I type them up. And whenever I've typed them up, I put like a line through the word so I know that I've typed it up. I don't really remember what I've written. One thing that happened to me in the middle of writing this book was I had not typed up for a while because it's I find it quite a boring thing to do. And I lost one of the notebooks on an aeroplane when I was traveling somewhere. There was a lot of great writing. There was a lot of ideas. And I was just utterly unable to get it back. And so that is to say that only when I've gone over something so many times is it very familiar with me, to me. Generally, when I'm reading something, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I wrote that. Like, it seems surprising.
It's as if someone else did write it.
Yeah, I can recognize it. It's kind of like, it's like in the way that when you look through a photo album, you recognize everything. You're like, oh, I remember that day. That was really fun. But if you were to just sort of conjure up every photo in your photo album, you might not be able to do it from memory.
Steve Toltz, I understand you're working on a play now?
Written a play that's kind of floating out there in the world. We'll see what happens with that. And then I am working on my third book as well, which is the third in a kind of what I think of as the fear trilogy. So there's one more fear that I, you know, written about death, life, and now there's one more.
Steve Toltz, you were not known as a writer. How did a book like Fraction of a Whole get published? I mean, did you just send it to an agent?
I literally finished the book, turned my chair around and looked at the books that were on my shelf, and I picked out the favorite contemporary ones and then Googled their agents. And then, you know, I printed it out, and as I said, it was 1,070 pages, so that's like two reams of the paper that you buy at the store plus more. And I mailed it from Australia to agents in London and into New York, which is a very expensive exercise. As I said, I had all those rejections. And while I was doing that, my sister met a writer at a party randomly in LA, and she said to this writer, my brother's written a book. Do you happen to know any agents? He's looking for an agent. And the writer said, who she'd never met before, said, I don't know any agents, but I know someone at Random House, and maybe he can recommend an agent. And so I sent the book to him, and he rang me like the next day and said, I want to publish it. So that's basically how it happens. So it's a hard one to recommend to other writers.
At that point, he read the 1,000-page version. Though.
Yeah, he read the 1,000-page version. I'd cut it down. I'd cut it down to 800.
But it still had Aldo in it.
No. It was a very good agent in the UK had said, look, if you cut it out, maybe I'll look at it again. But I cut it out, and then it just went in another direction.
So you didn't send it back to him?
I didn't send it back to her, no. I also was, thinking, this is your chance now. You have it now. If you believe in it, take it.
So you sent it to Random House, the 800 pages, and that's when it got shuffled down a little bit smaller through the editing process.
Yeah. I mean, the editing process probably took off another sort of 80 pages or something like that. The Australian versions are physically longer than the American versions, even though they're the exact same text. It's just that you guys have smaller print.
You've been listening to an interview with Steve Taltz, whose novel is titled Quicksand. I'm Richard Walensky on Bookwaves.